I first met Rick Mastin in a very brief introductory way about 15 years ago, but it's only been in the past 3 years that he and I have developed an ongoing friendship. The name is familiar to some of you I know, but not, I would imagine, to all. Mr. Mastin, make that Reverend Mastin, although that's not a title he uses very often. He's a writer, a poet, a songster, for much of his life a combination UU minister and troubadour. Among many venues he's appeared in during his performing days, he estimates he's been in a little over 500 of our UU congregations around the country, and he thinks he might have been here. He says, I can't remember if it was Nashville or Milford sometime prior to my ministry here, but he knows this part of the country pretty well, although he lives just south now, where he's lived all his life, just south of Carmel, California. Within our Unitarian Universalist Communion, he is best known and recognized as the writer and the composer of the song, Let It Be a Dance, which is in our hymnal. 6 years ago, Rick Mastin was diagnosed with prostate cancer, treatable but not curable. The treatments, which began in 1999, and the effects of the cancer itself kept him close to home and off the road, which he had traveled so well and so extensively for so many years and decades prior to that. And then about a year ago, but just this year ago, back last spring, his treatments had worked well enough to get him to the point where he could pick up his guitar and his poetry books and get on an airplane and get back on the circuit. Got himself a series of gigs in the New York and New Jersey area, and at age 75, he headed out. Michelle and I caught one of his change of pace appearances at a home concert he did down in Elizabeth, New Jersey about a year ago. This spring, he did another East Coast swing, getting home just last week. My schedule was such this time around that I couldn't get down to catch up to him, but I hear it went very well. As Rick prepared for his tour back last spring, I suggested in an email to him that he take a cue from the governor of his fine state and call his tour the I'll Be Back Tour. He didn't take me up on that, although he did like the idea of calling it a resurrection tour, this coming back to life after facing the very real possibility at the end of it, which led me to suggest he might try calling it the NBY Tour, which stands for Not Dead Yet, and I didn't get too far with that one either, although he at least did see the humor in it. I still think I'll Be Back would have been kind of a cool title. For if I've managed to develop any kind of philosophy of life during the time life has given me so far, that is largely it. That we find meaning in our ability to come back to life and to the fullness of living after those times when life has been severely, sometimes diminished for us. And we find meaning in keeping the faith that life is worth coming back to, even while we know that it is not ours forever. I'm going to stay with Rick for just a few more minutes. As you might expect from someone whose stock in trade is poetry, Rick Mastin dealt with his cancer diagnosis by writing poetry about it. Some of it he published in a book called Parallel Journeys, which he wrote with the physician who's treating him, and some of it he posts on a website he has in a section of his website called Prostate Cancer Odyssey. I'm going to read a portion from a couple of them. He calls them his cancer poems, actually. First one is called On Butterfly Wings. You know, for the life of me, I can't recall what happened last Good Friday. On Easter, it rained, so the candy hidden in the grass got sticky, and we had to wash the ants off before we let the kids out. But somehow, I missed Good Friday. An old guru once told me that the only thing we really have to do in this life is die. And I think I shall repeat this statement over and over, 100 times each night before I go to sleep. Perhaps if I can bring myself to believe it, I mean really believe it, and remember what happens on Good Friday, I might just come out and find myself some sunny Easter morning on butterfly wings. Right. And then in a more metered and rhyming style, this is a verse from one of his poems called A Word for Survival. The outcome of any illness is never absolute. No matter what the drama, the end is always moot. It's only in uncertainty that true hope can be found. And you can bet a sure thing will always let you down. Use those last four lines there as a jumping off place. It's only in uncertainty that true hope can be found. And you can bet a sure thing will always let you down. Now, I realize those words throw conventional and traditional religion on its ear. But their author is a Unitarian Universalist minister, after all. The words also come from one who has had to face his mortality head on, and who has found a healing hope, a healing kind of hope, in the uncertainties that such a situation brings. And Rick has also managed to capture in a few poetic lines the essence of a good deal of what I've been saying from this pulpit for years, which reinforces my belief that poetry is a far more means and a far more efficient means of expression than prose, even though prose remains my main mode of expression. Back to those lines. I have chosen, as have many of us, a religious and spiritual path that reflects the truth contained within them. My hope is vested in my ability to deal with uncertainty, with mystery, with wonder at the unknown. Even in those times when uncertainty can and does take a cruel and painful or inexplicable turn. I choose this path rather than relying on the alleged sure thing that can indeed let one down. And when I say my hope is vested in my ability to deal with uncertainty, mystery, and wonder, it's more really than just an ability to deal with these things. It also means I look to the possibility of discovering meaning and joy and fulfillment in the midst of uncertainty and mystery and wonder. Part of what we celebrate in this season is a rebirth of wonder and a rebirth of possibility, even in the midst of all the uncertainties that confront us. Uncertainties that sometimes bless us, uncertainties that sometimes bring pain to us. Well, now let's go back and bring in that free verse poem on butterfly wings. Sounds a little harsh in places. An old guru once told me the only thing we really have to do in this life is die. But this is one of those unusual instances where you have to read poetic language on an absolute literal level in order to get its meaning. Well, the statement is literally true. The only thing really required of us when it comes to living our lives is to get out of them at some point. But look where Maston goes with this. I think I shall repeat this statement over and over 100 times each night before I go to sleep, which means, among other things, he's shifted from the literal to the metaphorical level, because there's no way on earth he does that every single night. But anyway, he says, perhaps if I could bring myself to believe it, I mean really believe it, and remember what happens on Good Friday, I might just come out and find myself some sunny Easter morning on butterfly wings, right? Take the words in their totality, then. If the only thing required of us in life is to leave it at some point, what happens on Good Friday, that is to say, then think of all that this understanding or realization then allows us to do. Think of the possibilities it opens up. And think also of how the truth of these poetic words challenges. For the challenge is to find the ways within ourselves, to find the resources, the means, both within ourselves and whatever we draw our strength from. The challenge is to find the ways of saying, I'll be back, after whatever Good Friday experiences may have been visited upon us. This indeed has been the theme of this season over the ages of human history throughout the Western world. For our earliest human ancestors, this was the time of the year when the earth itself said, I'll be back. For many of the pagan or earth-centered traditions, this was and is a very sacred and holy time of year, the return of life to a seemingly dead earth. In fact, the term Easter itself, as I've shared on other occasions, most likely comes from the name of an Anglo-Saxon goddess of the spring called Estre. Some of our pagan forebears dedicated a month to celebrating her return, a month that roughly corresponds to our month of April. In Greek mythology, this was a time when Persephone said, "I'll be back," or "I am back," upon being allowed, as that myth goes, to return to the earth, to walk the earth after being made to live in the underworld for 6 months out of the year. The Passover legend is that of a people going back to the land of their ancestors after breaking loose from enslavement and bondage. And we'll celebrate that story in a few more weeks when we have our Passover Seder here. And since the first Christians or followers of Jesus, as they were originally called, were also Jews, they celebrated the coming of the Messiah as a feature of their Passover celebration. And as Easter became a separate religion, and the church essentially then appropriated Easter for itself, it became a separate holiday. I continue to remain fascinated by the powers that be in the early church chose the name of Easter for this holiday when the term comes from a pagan goddess, but let's leave that one aside. The story or the legend or the myth in this tradition is that following the torturous death of their founder, Jesus of Nazareth, he came back from the dead and urged his followers to continue the ministry and carry forth the message they had proclaimed together. And what I see happening here, as I tried to say to our children a little earlier, what I see happening here in human terms is that the followers of Jesus, after experiencing both fear and abandonment after his death, decided to go back to the things he had taught him and bring back, in a sense, or bring back to the world the message he had taught them, which they felt the world so much needed to hear about the ways of love and justice and compassion and peace and healing. And so we have these three, at least, there's probably more, but we have at least these three traditions here in our Western Hemisphere. Each of them has their own stories, each has their own legends, each has their own mythology. And they all share, though, in a common theme. And that theme is that it is possible to come back to life, back to fulfillment, back to wholeness, following those deaths in life that we all experience. The Good Fridays that are visited upon each of us. They each and all carry the common theme that life in one way or another emerges out of death. And hope in one way or another overcomes despair and meaninglessness. Legend and myth, as the late Joseph Campbell so often reminded us, is really about what's going on in here within ourselves right now. And not primarily about something out there in some distant and fanciful past. And so the stories, the legends, the myths to which I've just alluded here are ones that present us with a challenge and a choice, whether one follows the religion that has sprung from them or not. And it is the challenge and the choice to discover both within ourselves and in that which we sense is beyond ourselves, the strength and the resources to come back to life after those times when it has been demeaned, diminished, or taken from us. It is a challenge to come back after those times when, for any number of reasons, we may feel lifeless. It is a challenge to find a means of saying, "I'll be back." For the universal promise of this season, with its many celebrations, ancient and new, is that we can be brought back and we can choose to come back. Some of our resurrections, some of our returnings, really come to us as a gift, which we only have to be in a mood and a mode to receive. That's the case with the new life that comes back to earth after a winter that has tried us rather dearly. I was really serious about feeling I was violating some natural law of the universe if I didn't get those things off my lawn before this Sunday. But life does come back after a winter that has tried us dearly, and that just happens. We don't will it. We can only wait for that gift to come. This is often the case, too, following the death of a loved one There are steps you can take to come back. There are steps you can take to re-engage with life and to move on. But there's also a strong element of waiting when someone close to you has passed away. Just waiting for life to return to you and not trying to rush a resurrection or a return, but rather allowing it to come even as the earth allows, in a sense, warmth and light to come to it after a period of cold and barrenness. So this is who we are on this Easter morning. We're members of a gathered community who have weathered another winter, one that has brought us joy and pleasure as well as weariness and frustration. We are persons who live with our uncertainties as well as with the hopes and the dreams that we carry for ourselves and our world. We are persons who have each known our own Good Fridays, some of them best known, some of them only known in our individual hearts and minds. And yet we are persons who believe that whatever those Good Fridays may have been, we can still come forth and find our Easter mornings on butterfly wings rising. We can still come back to our better selves, to our hopeful selves, to our healed selves, however cut off from them we may feel at times. For it is in coming back that we experience our Easter moments. So my hope for you on this morning and on all the mornings of your lives, through all the seasons of your lives, is that you will know such moments, that Easter moments will be an ongoing experience for you. So on that note, a very happy, blessed Easter, a happy and blessed springtime to all of you. Let's sing together hymn number 270. Thank you.